poo is actually better than bone, because in bone you have the actual DNA of the animal or the individual. But in poo you have the DNA of the individual, what he ate, any viruses or pathogens he harbored. So poo is more complete.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
We have the honor of interviewing Professor Hendrik Poyner of the Department of Anthropology at McMaster University, also known as the Poop Doctor.
He is a molecular evolutionary geneticist and a biological anthropologist too.
It was great.
It's Chinese. Well, I wouldn't call it Chinese at that point, because Chinese later, I mean, like all humans, we came from Africa about 200,000 years ago. But this is actually about 2 million years old. And it's from, yes, it's from Homo erectus, from a cave called Zhukachen, China. So this is the oldest human feces known in the world.
So how do you know it actually is what you say it is?
That's a good question. There's actually two things that this could be. There's one other animal that produces poop that looks like this. You guys have any idea?
A hyena?
Yes, very good. That's right. So the only thing that's very difficult to differentiate is hyena poop and human poop.
So you're sure it's human? Is it?
So we are actually pretty sure it's human because of DNA tests. Right, so that's one thing, is we can identify everything by DNA, if it contains DNA still.
Can I touch it?
Yes, you can.
I'm not touching that.
It doesn't smell anymore. At this point, it's become almost mineral, so it's actually like chalk. Anyone want to hold ancient human poop?
Matthew?
Okay, so that's one. Let's move on to something else. So what is this? Yes, it's a tooth. What kind of tooth?
A bear?
It is a bear. Cave bear. Actually, this is the short-faced bear from North America, and he was 2.5 times the size of a Kodiak bear. So he was huge. He would make a grizzly bear look like a raccoon. So if they were standing on their hind legs, they would go probably about 12 to 15 feet up. So you can imagine trying to hunt these guys was not easy. What's this? Not a mammoth.
Elephant,
but not a tooth. It's an elephant tusk. This is actually a recent elephant tusk, right? And the reason they sent us this is because actually a lot of things that come across the border illegally are made out of ivory, elephant ivory, right? And so what we designed is a test by DNA to determine whether or not the ivory that comes across the border that's confiscated by the police is actually mammoth ivory from mammoth tusks, which is legal, or elephant ivory, which is illegal. So I could tell you, if you gave me a tiny little piece of this, if I just took like a few of these scrapings, I could do a DNA test, and from that I could tell you whether it was an African elephant, an Asian elephant, or a mammoth. So, and we use this in a forensics testing.
So why would it be legal if it's mammoth then? I mean, I'd imagine.
Because mammoth tusks are a dime a dozen. So if you look at that photograph in there, can you see that?
I'll grab it.
This is where I was last summer. This is an ice cave. And this is a cave that was made out of one of those mole drills. You know those drills that go through, right? The Russians used to hide weapons during the Cold War in this. And now they've changed it into a museum, which is a good change, right? These are all the mammoth tusks that they find up in the permafrost in the frozen grounds in Russia. Right? And they bring them all back to these caves, and they store them there, and there's actually rooms in here. There's thousands of mammoth remains. And so mammoth ivory is a dime a dozen up there. So that's legal to create things out of mammoth ivory. In fact, I have a small piece of tusk. We have complete tusks down in the lab, but here's a small piece of the external side of a mammoth tusk. So if we...
That looks a bug.
So this was just the coating on one of his tusks. And there actually, what you see, we've actually sampled some of it when we were making up our test to see how to get DNA from his tusk.
Okay.
This is pretty easy.
One bone.
It's a bone. Whose? We have them here in Ontario, even though they've been brought over from Europe a long time ago.
Cow?
Cow. Very good. Cow. So cow, they used to have wild cows running around the Middle East, today where Israel is. This actually turns out to be one of the earliest domesticated cow bones in the world. The very first cows that were dragged off the field and put into an enclosure, these remains have been uncovered from archaeological sites in Israel. Okay, so we're trying to figure out from the DNA when they domesticated them and what were the characteristics as to why they domesticated them. What was it? Was it because of milk? Was it because they looked pretty? Was it because they had pretty black and white spots? Was
maybe, maybe the meat?
Maybe the meat. Best preservation is in Siberia or the Yukon or
can
the
I,
colder
I
the better. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can. Any of those pieces you can pick up.
Two times in the woods, we came across dead deer. One
dead deer?
Just
oh,
the
yeah.
Bones, and the other, it still had some
yeah. Poachers. Okay, so what's this? This is not, it's not a very complete...
A jawbone.
It's a jawbone, very good. Whose?
A giant sloth.
Very good.
Yeah.
That's the extinct giant sloth. This is how big the sloth was. He was huge. He was giant. He lived throughout North and South America until 10,000 years ago. All these guys. This guy died 10,000 years ago. This guy died 10,000 years ago. This guy died 10,000 years ago. This Manicuria from South America, 10,000 years ago. The giant glyptodont. 10,000 years ago.
10,000 years ago?
The extinct, exactly. Musk oxen, 10,000 years ago. And the saber-toothed tiger, 10,000 years ago. So why did they die out 10,000 years ago?
Climate change.
That's one hypothesis that the climate changed. But the climate changed for these guys many times over the course of their history. There's another theory that's actually even fits better with the data.
Was there some sort of predator?
There was, yes. A very nasty natural predator.
Oh.
Yeah.
Humans?
Yeah. So in fact, all these guys, which lived in North America, all went extinct at the time that these guys came across in through Alaska and down into North America. Mm-hmm. So the competing theory is that this guy killed them all for food as their populations grew.
And you can find out if they actually ate that stuff.
That's right. We can find it in their poo. Mm-hmm.
So have you found all these in their poo?
What we have found in human feces from caves in southwestern United States is actually lots of bighorn sheep and goats, a different type of North American goat called Oreamus, and all these guys. So it's clearly they were eating lots of meat. They probably hunted
that
these guys
like
to extinction.
To me.
What's this?
Amber?
Amber. What's amber?
Sap that's fossilized.
Exactly. It's fossilized. It's tree sap.
It has insects in it.
This does have an insect. So this piece actually has a small beetle in it. And this is actually, this comes from the Dominican Republic, a small island in the Caribbean. And this one is actually, this is Mexican and it has leaves in it. And the best amber in terms of inclusions is, are both the Dominican and the Mexican amber. But my daddy is the leading expert of amber. That's what he does for a living. So he collects amber from all over the world and then takes pretty pictures of them and identifies what's in them. So you can see how good the preservation is in them. So you look, in this case, you had a pollen pod and you actually have the pollen falling out in the amber. You have the petals and the stamens and the, right? And then you have insects with diseases coming out of them. You have mushrooms. You have weevils.
So it's a kind of a time machine.
It is. It's a time machine. These things are 40 million years old. Right? And they look like they're just yesterday. Look at the scorpions, spiders.
From going from amber to poo, was that a big leap, or is that when did that occur?
When I went to poo, you mean?
Well, no, just when did poo, is poo...
Yeah, poo is a much more recent gold mine that I investigated as a graduate student in Munich. We figured that poo is actually better than bone, because in bone you have the actual DNA of the animal or the individual. But in poo you have the DNA of the individual, what he ate, any viruses or pathogens he harbored. So poo is more complete. Right? So hence we actually decided to go to feces. So here's mammalian hair. So this is actually turns out to be a giant cat that scratched himself up against a tree that had the sap, and then his hair got caught. Right? So this is the famous mosquito. Did anybody see Jurassic Park? So if you look at the back of Jurassic Park, it's my dad who's credited with the story, because he gave Michael Crichton the idea to write the book Jurassic Park. So this was supposedly the picture that Michael used in coming up with the idea that there was blood from a dinosaur that this mosquito had sucked, and they were going to get the blood out and clone the dinosaur back to life. pass these around and look at the little bugs and the leaves and the insects inside.
How long ago did this?
10,000. It's always a good guess if someone asks you when did these things go extinct. It's go 10,000.
How did you get interested in all this?
Well, my dad was a paleontologist, so he used to drag me out as a kid to all these great digs, and we went all over the world, and I loved it, but I also loved biochemistry at school and genetics, so I wanted to combine the two, and so that's what I did. I took fossils, but I'm more interested in sort of what the DNA can tell us about evolution, and how humans have changed over time, or what the animals were doing before they went extinct. Hold on, let me show you some more. These are recent samples that we just got, actually. And let's see if any of you guys know what these come from. They're teeth. Any idea where they're from? These are small teeth, but what do you think? Probably many of you have one at home.
Dogs.
That's right. And you know what these turn out to be? These turn out to be the oldest dogs in America. Does anybody know how dogs came to America?
Were they brought here?
Yes, by who?
The Indians.
That's right. The first ones were brought by the people that came across the, well, Beringia, which was the frozen part between Russia and Alaska. So, and then, I've got something, I haven't opened these up, and I really shouldn't, because they should go in the clean room, but these actually are hair found in Newfoundland. And they're actually much older than when Columbus arrived in the New World. So it turns out, and the hair comes from Greenland, but it was found in Newfoundland. The hair of rats, and hair of animals that only occur in Greenland. So it means that Vikings were probably in Newfoundland before Columbus ever set foot in America, which is sort of known, but it's not in the academic world. It's been fought like crazy. No one wants to believe that. Okay, now this. Anybody know what this is? No, it's my favorite thing to study.
Poo!
Yes. This is actually fossil poop that comes from the Green River beds in Idaho. You often see fish in these, but it turns out that actually the most common fossil in these beds is poop. That's not surprising. It was the bottom of a lake, and everybody who was in the lake was pooing, right? So it just, it fossilized and preserved itself for millions of years. That's like 50 million years old.
Wow.
I think
it's fun to study poop, though.
You have to study a lot of science and obviously kinds of fields, right?
Yeah, but I enjoy the mixing of the fields. So I'm not, even though I studied genetics, I prefer the joints in between the fields of anthropology and genetics and biochemistry. I always found the niche in between better, more interesting than any one particular place.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
So a lot of people now have asked me whether or not we're going to clone a woolly mammoth.
Oh, that's the question that kids were afraid of.
That's what everybody wants to know.
My kids are very opposed to the idea.
Are they? That's interesting. Why? Let me hear why.
Well,
I want to know why.
Well, I like the idea of things that have been dead for thousands of years walking again.
Yeah, that's what I feel.
Yeah,
you think it's unethical?
Do you think it's unethical?
Yeah.
How do we know they were nice? They could eat us all.
I don't think it's bad to the animals.
Yeah.
Now, what if I told you that...
they wouldn't really be alive.
What if I told you, though, that the data overwhelmingly shows that humans killed them 10,000 years ago?
Yeah.
Does that make it more fair? Or does that not add anything to the picture?
So would they be able to adapt as easily?
Could they adapt to this environment?
To the current climate. So the climate would work, whether or not you could put them in the same places. I mean, unfortunately, you can't put them downtown Kansas anymore because... But you could certainly put them in Siberia because most of it's unpopulated and could house them.
But isn't it like playing God or something?
Yeah, we've talked about... I'm not sure it's... Is it playing God? I mean... This is an interesting question. That's why I've always posed it, because I want to see what people say. And you'd be amazed at the range it goes from outright, absolutely, no, you're playing too much, to, well, if we were involved in decimating their populations, shouldn't we be, right? To those who say, now this is just another scapegoat for humans, that every time something else goes. My question was always, and I gave this public lecture in Toronto where I posed it, so what if the panda goes extinct tomorrow in China? People repopulate the area where it lives, it has no place to live, and we have a few, let's say, in the zoo, one left, and it dies, and so it's gone. Would you want to bring it back, or would it just be a memory? Well, you've seen it, but what about your children?
I'm thinking, future generations. That's interesting.
If it were right away, I'd try and bring it back, but if we were waiting hundreds of years, I wouldn't bring it back.
That's exactly where I wanted to lead you down this road, which is what I did in this talk, which is...
Brain would be rotted, wouldn't it?
So there's you're saying there's a time frame, but what's the time frame on bringing it back? Well, the dodo died out 150 years ago, is that too old? Is that okay?
Yeah.
That's okay, 150?
No, it wasn't.
It's not okay. Okay, what about the Siberian, one of the Siberian tigers went extinct 3 years ago. Can we bring him back? That's 3 years.
I don't think so.
So 3 years, so we can go, okay, so what about the poison dart frogs from the Amazon forest who went extinct about 6 months ago?
I still think it's a little bit too long. I think about 24 hours would be the most.
So now, I'm going to give you the worst kind of question of all. A mother writes me an email and says that her child has just died and she wants me to bring that child back to life by cloning it.
Never.
No, okay. But it's less than 24 hours.
I still wouldn't like that.
No, you wouldn't like that. But I mean, that's a human. It becomes a different thing.
It's not actually the same child. Yeah, it wouldn't
be the same person.
I think you guys are right on. I mean, I think either you're for or against it. Because if you get into the time game, then you start asking. When, right? You can go for human killing, for human, you can go all the way back to these guys. Human, 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 human. And that's only a few of the ones that I've talked about.
I get worried because I think that people, if they think that they can just bring species back,
they
can be
sloppy.
So negligent.
Yeah.
Negligent.
I just think it's disgusting to bring something back that's not alive anymore.
Yeah.
If you were going to bring back any sorts of things, how long would it take?
To bring them back?
Yeah.
Oh, the science is not there yet. It could be years and years and years down the road. It would take a long time to do it.
What do you think, then?
I think as an objective scientist, one shouldn't pose one way or the other way. I think one has to investigate everything. So, in fact, I mean, that's why we proposed having this first international meeting on the resurrection of extinct organisms. In fact, it's been done. Does anybody know? Something has actually been brought back from the dead and made alive. So it was an extinct organism, and it was actually sequenced from a frozen body, and it was resurrected and brought back to life so it could be studied. It was a real nasty bug that killed 40 million people.
But why would they want to bring it back?
Yeah.
To study it.
So what if it got away? What if it went wrong?
It was the flu. So in 1918, it was one of the worst flus ever of all time. Killed 40 million people after World War I. And they took it from a frozen body in the Yukon, sequenced its genome, brought it back to life, and now it's at the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, where they're studying it. And the idea to study is, we have another flu that should break out at some point. If we understand what that one did back in 1918, can we make a vaccine to prepare ourselves for the one that comes
out? Maybe that might be good, because it's not a person or something that was living. I mean, it's like a disease, so I guess that would not be too bad.
Well, the virus is sort of a living. It requires someone to live on.
Yes.
But it was a being, so to speak.
Yeah. Mm.
But it's a deadly, it killed 40 million. I don't think my mammoth, even if you let it out downtown Toronto, could ever do that. So it's just an interesting question. I'm not sure there is a right or wrong answer. But it's interesting to see how people think about it. I mean, there's no question that probably creating a hybrid mammoth at some point will be done down the road. Somebody will do it. Right? So the question is, should one do it right, correctly first, or at least investigate all of it before someone does it wrong and creates, right?
A monster. Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Yeah. Just doing things like that. And maybe just try and protect a few of them for a while and get them to mate, and then when there are more of them, they can be set free again.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And conservation geneticists try to do exactly that. But in places where you have very limited control, there's nothing you can do, unfortunately. Right? And these are only the big animals that we know about. What about all the little insects and stuff that go extinct daily when people are making housing developments that no one really knows?
And in the rainforest?
And the rainforest, daily. Plant species. Mm-hmm. Right? So we're losing diversity. So the proponents of something like this say all you're doing is bringing back some of the diversity that we've helped to lose. Oof.
That's it. That's a fox race.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Evolution never stops. Yeah, in fact, they see that on some of the Darwin's finches, as you still see evolution taking place. So that certain species are starting to split because there's new berries. And actually, the reason a lot of that is happening, there's one single greatest force on most species in the world today, and that's humans. And that's either indirectly via climate change, right? Things are getting hotter, fish can't live in certain... So new species that can live are adapting to those new climates. And the ones that can handle the hot water just die. Unfortunately, that's the way evolution goes, except we've happened to be the greatest influence. So, for example, in the New York Harbor, there's so much ibuprofen that's been pumped in the water from people taking pills, and there's actually so much birth control pills that all the fish have actually changed into females. Right? So what happens is that then all of a sudden you get a population of fish that can't reproduce anymore because male fish can actually change sex in the presence of these hormones. Right? And it's all being pumped out because... Right. So it's a fragile world.
Climate change and it's continuing. Well, obviously more animals are going to go extinct. Are we just going to recreate them? Are we going to deal with the fact that there's climate change and do something about it? Or like, just how do you view this whole situation? Like, as a scientist,
trying to stop the climate change rather than trying to bring back.
I don't think you can stop it anymore. I think it's.
Well, there's some aspects of it that I don't think that can be stopped. I think some things can be stopped, right?
Yeah, if you stop doing the things that make it continue to happen, then it would stop at this point. Maybe animals that are becoming extinct would be able to continue to live in the way they are, maybe continue to reproduce, and they would get a larger population.
Well, I think, there's some changes that we won't be able to go backwards on, right? So some things, the climate has clearly changed. The temperature has gone up in the oceans. Some corals are dying. New corals are taking over, right? So I think what you're going to see happen with climate change is decreasing diversity, right? And there's going to be certain species that have what we call tremendous phenotypic plasticity. So they can, it's hot, but it's okay. You know, I rearrange myself and get my shorts on. And it's cold, I put my layers on, right? And the bugs that are just happy right in the middle, those are the ones that are going to go. And so,
I think... You also need to get more from the things that become... Stretching trip a bit. There will also be ones that are going to become more, right? A different kind could come because of the different changes.
Yeah, I think you're right. So what happens is, here you have this tremendous diversity, and now you've got a climate like this. And you've got all these guys, and these guys, somehow, they okay in that. And they come, and they repopulate everything. So now you've gone from 10 species to one who comes and says, I take over all the area, because I like it hot, right? So you're increasing the frequency and the amount of that type of species in a population. But what you've lost is those 9 other guys that were so beautiful in the ocean, or so beautiful in the in the desert. And now you've got one. He's still beautiful. There's no reason why you shouldn't save him. But the 9 that you've lost have become, you're going to have to yearn for those, right? And you're right in the sense that it could be now over time that these 9 start splitting off into their own species. And that'll be years and years, right? Evolution occurs over millions of years. It's not something you and I will ever see.
Okay, so we'll bring back the mammoths and then we'll have a climate that can't support them.
That's right. Absolutely. No, the issue is, this is a scapegoat thing, which is why a lot of people say, all you're doing is providing a way for humans to, right? We're going to have big, ice houses in Siberia to cool them because, right, you're going to have freezers or air conditioning units sitting outside. The reality is climate change is the priority number one. Mm-hmm. This is just a second thought, right? I think it's investigating it for all sorts of reasons as to, for me, it's really about what makes a mammoth from an Indian elephant, from an Asian elephant. What were the changes that caused this thing to become larger, hairier, cold adapted? That's a real academic question. Yeah. Doesn't provide any benefit there. But now if I go and study HIV, which we do, our question is, how has HIV changed since it began in Africa in the late 50s? And if we understand how HIV changes, can we develop vaccines that address that constantly evolving thing? So it's the same thing. How do things change over time? And how do you harness that for, in the case of HIV, vaccines? In the case of a mammoth, for academically interesting questions about how we change over time. We study bones that come from ancient Rome, ones that go all the way back to the Egyptian mummies, But I've always, as a kid, I've been always much more interested actually in the much older stuff, so like the saber-toothed tigers or the Australopithecines. So this guy made the poop that you were just holding. Okay? And then I like to tease the biologists that they are time-trapped, right? They can only work with living today. They don't go back in the past. But I prefer to go back in time, so these are actually fossilized humans, and this is a Neanderthal. So there I am in a clean room when I was doing my graduate work, right? So we work in sterile rooms that are like microchip factories. And then we work inside these special boxes that have blue lights on that kill any DNA. So we make sure it's clean. Then we turn the blue light off and we extract from the bones. So I want to show you a little bit about my mammoth project. So the best place to find mammoths is up here in the very top of Siberia, or Russia. Okay, and this is the plane we took. It was a scary plane. Here's the North Pole, and here's where we were. So we're about 500-600 miles from the North Pole, really all the way at the top. And it's Katanga. And then what we do is we get on an old Russian military helicopter and we would fly out. And we'd fly out to this little lake in the Tamir Peninsula to look for samples. This was the ice cave. Then when we'd find samples, we'd bring it back and we'd put it in the ice cave. And we spent weeks cutting out mammoth samples. Look, here's a foot of an entire mammoth, 60,000 years old. Here's actually, this sample was so well preserved that when we drilled in it, blood squirted out and refroze in the cave because we were working at minus 15 degrees. This is a, and then what would we do after the helicopter? We'd cut huge chunks of the permafrost out where we'd see big tusks sticking out. And then we'd thaw the permafrost with hair dryers. And eventually what would come out were these. Look, this is a whole head of a mammoth. I mean, you can't find better preservation. This is the best sample I've ever seen in my life. So this is my time machine. It's called a genetic sequencer. And they've got lots of them at this company in Connecticut, and I'm trying to buy one for McMaster. We would be the first place in Canada to get one if we could get one. They cost lots of money, $500,000 for one machine. But they have this amazing thing, is they can take teeth or bone samples like the mammoth. We sequence a lot of DNA in a very short time. So we sequence 28 million bases in 5 hours, which is about 0.0001% of the amount of time that it used to take us to do it. This is a baby mammoth. Yeah, this is Dima, who was found in the frozen permafrost. And it's, as a kid growing up, it was my favorite fossil. So when I was in St. Petersburg, I made sure to get my photograph with her. If you go back and look through some of the archaeology books on the techniques that they were using 10,000 years ago, it's phenomenal. So trap pits, the common thing was to run them off cliffs.
Right.
And they managed to kill hundreds of them that way. Like, I mean, you can go to these bone beds in Mammoth Park in southwest Dakota, and it's phenomenal. Thousands and thousands of mammoths that have been run off this cliff and then clubbed or stoned. In Siberia and Russia, you have these famous mammoth hütte, these huts made out of the bones of mammoths. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of them made, and the bones came from somewhere. They were clever.
Thank you.
The end.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.